Ignition.
Log Talk Radio.
It's first round. Here we go.
Welcome to All About Wine, featuring Ron, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert with Florida Estates Winery.
Labels themselves, they become an art form.
We encourage listeners, wine enthusiasts, and winemakers to call the show and discuss topics related to wine.
This is Stuart Scott from Camas Prairie Winery.
Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235.
We have a variety of different sizes of bottles that are available.
Always informative and entertaining.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
It's all about wine.
So, Alabama.
And now, from Florida Estates Winery, Ron.
You still there?
Yep.
Okay. I was just going to comment. I think that blew out my sound card for a second there. I couldn't hear anything for about, 20 seconds.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Everything came in cleared.
Okay. Well, there
all
you go.
Good.
It's just on mine.
Bus people were cheering and shouting, and everything's good.
Very enthusiastic.
Yes, very enthusiastic. It's a little chilly out there, so they have to be enthusiastic to stay warm.
And last Thursday, I was calling on my way home from work. This Thursday, I am calling from Louisville, Kentucky.
Louisville, I think.
It's 28 degrees right now, and we have a light snow falling on the ground, so it's pretty cool out here. And anyway, if you'd like to get on our phone lines and talk about Kentucky or any other topic actually related to wine, then we'll try and get a wine.
Oh, you broke up a lot there. That was something that popped in there. You there? Doesn't sound like we have Mike on air right now. Oh, maybe we do. We got you there now, Mike?
We still have audio problems.
Yeah, okay. Well, let me talk about Kentucky. And you can go and work on your audio problems while we're doing this. I mean, probably it's because of that 29 degrees and snow flurries that have given you that problem. Actually, right down the street from Louisville is Frankfort, which is the capital. A lot of wineries around Frankfort and Louisville. There's an awful lot of them there in Kentucky. As we always do, let's start out setting up the state for you, telling you where it is and what it surrounds, and a little bit about the elevation and all that stuff. Kentucky is located in the eastern part of the United States, east of the Mississippi River. Actually, the Mississippi River forms a border on the far western side of the state of Kentucky, where it touches Missouri. Below Kentucky is Tennessee. On the east is Virginia, also West Virginia. To the north, we have Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois, like I say, in just south. They're calling that the Midwest now. They started to call that part of the country, Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee, the Midwest a few years ago, which I think is ridiculous. Then they call Kansas, Missouri, Iowa, Nebraska, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Texas, all those the Near West. So how they come about that, and I say they, it's the powers that be or whatever. I grew up in Missouri. It was always the Midwest to me, and it probably always will be. Kentucky is pretty, actually, it's an awful hilly state. There's small hills in most of the state, except for the far western edge of it, and that flattens out a little bit there. But basically, Kentucky is a rather hilly state, quite a few rivers running through it. Bordered on the north by the Ohio River, and I say that because that is of importance in a little bit here on what we'll be talking about. Kentucky counties are, every one of them is a very odd shape. We talked about Kansas and how symmetrical all the counties were in Kansas last week. Kentucky is the anti-square counties. These are all messed up, different shapes and everything. 120 of them total in the state, with most of them pretty small. I mean, you're getting 120 calories in a condensed area here. So most of the counties are pretty small. Major highways, we got Highway I-24, Interstate 24, that runs over on the far western edge of Kentucky. Oh, well, not the edge, but over in the far western part of Kentucky. I-65 runs out of Louisville straight on down to the into Tennessee. I-75 starts up in Minnesota, runs all the way down to southern Florida. It runs right through Kentucky. Lexington, Frankfort, all that area, right on I-75. You have I-64 running east and west. It is up again, Frankfort, Lexington, that area there, northern part of the state. There's a couple of three toll roads that dissect the state down in the southern part, and those sections of toll road, looks like they're trying to complete it, but as of the maps that I have, they aren't completed yet. Quite a few littler roads and smaller roads running all around Kentucky. Kentucky bluegrass, noted for its horse ranches and its tobacco farms. A lot of horse ranches in Kentucky, especially on up around Lexington and Frankfort and Louisville and that area up there. Beautiful, beautiful horse ranches. I was up there a couple years ago, and just gorgeous areas. Used to be a lot of tobacco farms. Elevation, the far western edge of Kentucky is a rather lower elevation. That's right next to the Mississippi River. Elevation runs down around, 600, lowest elevation around 600 feet overall, although the lowest point in the state of Kentucky is at 257 feet above sea level. That is located right on the Mississippi River, being the lowest elevation. The highest point in Kentucky is in the far western part of the, or I'm sorry, far eastern part of the state, actually southeastern part of the state, in the Black Mountain, which is 4,145 feet elevation. So a little bit higher. That's where you, on the border of Virginia and West Virginia, is where you start getting a little bit higher elevation for the state, because you're running into the mountain range on the eastern part of the state there. I can't think of the name of the mountains. What's the mountains on the eastern part of the state? I'm asking my engineer here. But Mike's there. He can usually answer me that. Blue Ridge Mountains, yeah. Blue Ridge area, yeah. It's so that's where you get an elevation, a height there. Smoky Mountains, well, that's not it either. It's I'll think of it later. Or Mike, if you hear me, what is it about? Oh, you're there.
Yes, I had that recall.
Oh, okay. The mountains on the eastern part of the United States, what is it? Appalachians.
Yeah, Appalachians.
Appalachians.
Kentucky, though.
Yeah, on the far eastern edge. It starts getting a little bit of the elevation from that. Not a lot, but a little bit of elevation. So, and then the rivers, major rivers going through Kentucky. Big one we have to talk about is Ohio River, which is the northern border of Kentucky. There's also the Kentucky River, the Cumberland, Rolling River. Quite a few of them running through the state. Kentucky really is a lot of rivers running through the state. On the far eastern part, we have Tug Fork River, which is a border between West Virginia and Kentucky. On the far western part of Kentucky, you have a couple of big lakes, the Kentucky Lake and Lake Barkley. And that pretty much sets up your state. It is the climate is overall northern. You get snows and stuff. Like Mike just said, in Lexington right now, 29 degrees and light snow. Southern part of Kentucky, you also get that type of climate. The little state does get rather chilly. I said that the Ohio River was going to be important. It is. The Ohio River is the AVA for Kentucky, the American viticultural area for Kentucky. The Ohio River is the second largest AVA in the United States. Actually, it was the largest up until 2009 when the Upper Mississippi Valley AVA was formed, and that's the one we talked about when we talked about Iowa a couple of weeks ago. The one up in the Upper Mississippi Valley one took over as number one in size and bumped the Ohio River Valley to number two. The four eastern states, Indiana, Ohio, West Virginia, and Kentucky, are the part of the Ohio River Valley AVA. An enormous AVA, 16 million acres, actually 16.65 million acres, to be precise, 6.75 million hectares. Land around the banks of the Ohio River, Kentucky River, and all that, separating it all the way on over to Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and all that area. The Ohio River AVA is divided between two climates, what they call a humid subtropical climate of the southeastern states and the humid continental climate of the northeastern states. And so it's got a lot of different types of flora and fauna and wildlife, plants, everything else. And it holds true for the grape varieties. The grapes were first planted in Kentucky in the early 19th century. A lot of catawba, actually, from the New York area and all that. It became the catawba actually became the most planted and very important grape variety in that area in Kentucky, Ohio, and all that. During the Prohibition, it basically halted wine in Kentucky, as pretty much every state in the nation. Previous to that, Kentucky was the second or third largest wine producing state in the country until Prohibition came in. The AVA vineyards now are planted mostly in hybrid grapes, a lot of Marechal Foch and Bacot Noir for red, and the white grapes of Sauvignon Blanc and Vidal. There's also within this AVA, the Ohio Valley AVA, some Vitis vinifera, Chardonnay, which, again, I repeat, Chardonnay seems to be grown everywhere. Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Riesling. One thing I have to point out about these AVAs, and this is something that is a sticky point, a contentious thing for AVAs and for different areas around the world. The AVA, this Ohio Valley AVA, is about the same distance as it is from the Moselle region of Germany to the Tuscany region of Italy. Within the Moselle to Tuscany region, you have lots and lots of different small viticulture areas, prime viticulture areas and all that. The Ohio Valley, Ohio River Valley AVA is as large as that area. It's a similar distance as from Champaign to Provence. It's enormous, an enormous area. And whenever there is criticism of the United States AVA systems and how it's set up and all that, invariably the argument about the Ohio River Valley and now the Upper Mississippi Valley AVAs are one of the first things that are brought into question because of the size of them. So, AVAs. The only one there is the Kentucky River Valley AVA, and it is the northern part, which happens to be where most of the wineries are in Kentucky. Kentucky has, and again, I get back to this, how many, I don't know for sure, because everything I'm reading is going to be different ones. 35 is the one that I recently read, so I tend to think that might be 35 wineries are available in existence in Kentucky now. Kentucky first started to do large-scale commercial viticulture and growing grapes in 1799. Actually, that's when they started the Kentucky Vineyard Society in 1799. So you're going back a long, long ways here. Kentucky has got a lot of history behind it for viticulture and grape growing. The early 19th century, our mid-19th century, earlier 20th century, Kentucky was the third largest wine-producing state in the country. So I said second or third. It's the third largest wine-producing state in the country. And then when Prohibition came in, it destroyed, and I mean destroyed is the word we need to use here, destroyed the Kentucky grape-growing industry, the viticulture industry in Kentucky. Now they are back up and going again. It's amazing. The state was actually founded and established in 1792, and in 1799, just 7 years later, the Kentucky Vineyard Society came into existence. I would have to think that would be probably one of the earliest actual vineyard societies in the country. I didn't see any contradiction to that statement, so I would almost have to think so. Grapes produced in Kentucky. This is by all means a pretty full list, but not all-inclusive. I'm sure there are others being planted by vineyards and growers. As one who's had a vineyard myself, and I've talked to lots of people, if someone has a chance to plant another grape, I guarantee you they will. So this list would not be complete. But Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, grown there. I mentioned Cabernet Sauvignon earlier. Carlos, which is a different family, Catawba, Cayuga, Chambord, Chardonnay, Concord, Deschenac, Marechal Foch, Merlot, Munson, Niagara, Norton or Cynthiana, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, Treminet, and Verdel Blanc. These are the majority of plantings with the state of Kentucky. Again, there are others spread throughout the state, but that's what you're going to find mostly there. I must be getting a phone call tonight from the proprietor of winemaker and owner of Equus Run Vineyards. I hope she does get an opportunity to call. So if the phone rings, I will just stop and jump right in with her right away. But talking about Kentucky, I have to talk about one of the things in Kentucky, one of the biggest in Kentucky as far as it goes. Kentucky has a cooperage. A cooperage is the making of barrels called Kelvin Cooperage. Kelvin is a temperature, like a degree, and then there's Kelvin, stuff like that. So it's sort of cool that they named it that, I thought. But Kelvin Cooperage is located in Kentucky. They are a family-run and operated cooperage. They were founded in 1963. The owner and the founder of Kelvin Cooperage is Ed McLaughlin, and he worked 5 years as an apprentice of the craft and coopering. In fact, as coopers, you have to put in time as an apprentice. You can't just go to school and go to junior college and take a and become a cooper. You have to do some time as an apprentice before you actually are recognized. He worked in Glasgow, which is in over in Scotland, and he served his. He made and served his time over in that part making whiskey and Scotch barrels of them. And in 1991 he relocated the Kelvin Cooperage to Louisville, Kentucky. So right up there where you're sitting right now, Mike, there's a coop around there.
Yes.
You sound clear now. You are.
You can hear me?
Yeah, very well. Thank you.
Okay.
The reason he chose Louisville because of the proximity to bourbon country, using oak barrels for bourbon. If you've never visited bourbon manufacturers in that part of the country, then it's well worth the trip. As you're stopping by visiting wineries, see is to see, go and follow the bourbon trail. And there actually is a bourbon trail up here. Just like there's pine trails, there's bourbon trails. When I was up in that part of the country, my wife and I had an opportunity to follow the bourbon trail, and we did. And actually, it was pretty fascinating. It was really a lot of fun, except for, which one was it? Jack Daniels. You know, Jack Daniels. You can visit them, you can steal stuff, you can buy stuff, but you can't taste. They are in Dry County. So everywhere else we went, they give you a little taste of it and all. So the, again, Edgar McLaughlin opened up 1991 with Cooperage in the Louisville area, Kentucky, to be close to the barrels. And he supplied his wine barrels for wineries throughout the United States and Australia. He has his oldest son, Kevin, who did his apprenticeship in Scotland, also running the plant in Louisville. In 2001, Kevin's brother, Paul, joined. And he is also has done his apprenticeship, and so it is a family business that is doing well. The barrels themselves, wine barrels, they use French oak, which is a tighter grain. This is why French oak is so expensive and why it's so popular, because it is a much tighter grain. And it is air dried for 2 years in France before transported to the cooperage in Louisville. Other they use is American oak, and this is another reason why they settled on the area that they did, because of the good locality or locale to getting oak from southwest Kentucky, central Kentucky, Missouri, Minnesota, and that area. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, we talked, 2 or 3 weeks ago, we talked to someone using Minnesota oak, and they absolutely love it. Also, this is dried for 2 years before it's used, exposed to both winter and summer weather. The beer that it dries and flexes and does everything properly. And then it is put together, and the heads are assembled using wooden dowels in the old cognac style. It says 6 scoops are put on to maintain the integrity of the barrels. And it is tested in air and water to be sure that it will hold its strength. I did discover something with this, which I really didn't know. Bordeaux and Burgundy barrels are actually a little bit different in size. The Bordeaux barrel will hold 59.4 gallons of wine, the Burgundy barrel 60.2. So it's 8 tenths of a gallon difference in what they will hold, height, sizes, and everything. Basically the same, or, you know, inch or two off here. But they have those. They have a 53-gallon barrel. They have what they call the DDX barrel, which is 69.9 gallons, a hogshead barrel, 79.2 gallons, and also a 25-gallon barrel available. They also sell used barrels. Lots of people are always calling me asking for barrels. I'm always referring them to other places. Kelvin Cooperage does sell barrels single or 50 at a time or whatever. They sell barrels, a lot of used whiskey barrels, to Scotch brewers, Canadian whiskey brewers, Irish whiskey, tequila, and rum makers. So this is quite an international company here. They have distributors in places all around the world, literally around the world, with quite a few in South America, Europe, all that. Kelvin Cooperage, located again in Louisville, Kentucky. If you are ever in that area, they do tours, and it is available. So it might be something that you you check out. Kentucky wineries. Obviously, and I'm sad to say, it doesn't look like we might be getting a call from Equus Run, but I do want to talk about Equus Run Winery. I've been there, and that's one of the reasons why I was hoping that she would be able to call. The Equus Run Winery is located just a little bit, let's see, Midway, Kentucky is the name of the town. Midway, Kentucky is located of actually east of Frankfort, north of Lexington, which is east of Louisville, right off by 75. Aquitaine Winery is what's a nice winery? I think I get emails still from Aquitaine Winery. They start to we sign up for emails, and I still don't get emails from them every week. They inform us of what's going on and all that. A little history behind Aquitaine Winery. They started out as a tobacco farm, as most wineries do in Kentucky. Almost all the wineries in Kentucky started out as tobacco farms, it seems. There was the tobacco settlement of a number of years ago. I don't know exactly what year. I'm sorry. I can't remember exactly, but there was a tobacco settlement, and a lot of the wineries that were harvesting and doing tobacco poured down the tobacco plants and planted vineyards and became wineries. The barns, all the old barns that you find on all the different properties and the wineries throughout the state of Kentucky, used to be the tobacco drying barns. Not that you're interested in anything, but when you pick tobacco, the first thing you do is you hang it upside down from the stalks on barns and let the leaves dry. And that's the first step, drying out leaves. And these barns are actually used for that. So when tobacco fell out of favor, then vineyards became the thing to do. The state of Kentucky, also when that happened, the state of Kentucky started a program to help the wineries get established and go, to create jobs, to actually the transition from the tobacco to grapes. And so they put a vote to the people of the state of Kentucky. And the vote is, would you be willing to back wineries and attend wineries and support wineries in the state if we allotted so much money to the wineries for the conversion from tobacco farms to winery? The state voted yes, we will do that. We will help. We will support. And I have to say, Kentucky, for you, the state does an excellent job. The wineries are supported strongly by people. When we were visiting wineries there, almost every one of them had people in it. Almost every single winery in Kentucky has a restaurant of varying sizes available. And when I see varying sizes, some of them are enormous restaurants, 200-seaters and barns and stuff like that that they converted over. The state of Kentucky also helps a lot with directors to a winery. And it just, I absolutely loved it. You could follow paths right to the front door of a winery. You would be going down, say, I-75, and there would be a sign that says, well, let's say Equus Run, for example. Equus Run Winery, next exit, 35 miles. You would take that exit. When you got down to the exit, there would be another sign there pointing whatever direction you needed to go. And it would say, Equus One Winery, point to the right, 32 miles. You go to the right, you start driving. After about 15 miles, there'll be another sign pointing to your left on a street. Equus Run Winery, 21 miles. You would turn down that road, you would go ways, there would be another sign pointing you the right direction. Equus Run Winery, miles. You go down, there'd be another sign. Equus Run Winery, 5 miles. and then there would be another sign. And it would literally take you right to the front door. They would have signs throughout the state guiding you from the main highways right up to the front door. It was amazing. It was phenomenal. You could find wineries very easy. There was never this question was, well, you know, I tried to find you and I didn't know where you were or something like that, because every one of them was that easy to find and that well marked to find it, which was of all the states I've been in, all the wineries I've been to, Kentucky had above and beyond the best signage to the front door of wineries that I've ever seen anywhere, which was part of the transition, was part of the thing of helping the wineries convert from the tobacco growing to the vineyards. So and again, a lot of them have restaurants. Almost every one of them have restaurants. We went to one, which I'll talk about a little bit, Gene Ferris winery, and high-end restaurant. I mean, just like the restaurant was almost the primary purpose, and the winery was secondary, but all around when you pull into the driveway and all around, there were vineyards and everything. Just a gorgeous place. Equus Run, the soil in the soil in Kentucky is your classic limestone loam, which you find a lot. Kentucky is being just south of Illinois, Indiana, and if you heard me when we talked about Illinois and Indiana, the glaciers came down and stopped just north of the border of Kentucky and Illinois and Indiana, just, you know, 600 miles north of the border. And as they were coming down the glaciers back during the Ice Age, it pushed the soil forward and into that direction. And doing that, it created some great soil for grape growing for the wine area. And this also affected Kentucky, the area in Kentucky and all of that and on down there. And they have the limestone loam soil that is good for grape growing, but also good for tobacco growing, obviously. They did that for years. This is the type of soil that they're working on there. Equus Run started in 1998. Family and friends of the owner, Cynthia Bond, B-O-H-N, I believe if I pronounce your name, but Cynthia, I'm sorry, Cynthia Bone, Bond, is now the winemaker and manager, captain of the ship, basically. She started doing case studies of Davi Vineyard years ago as part of her surfing at Harvard, and she was a farm girl, basically, working in the Kentucky tobacco industry with families and all that for years. And she had a chance to get her own vineyard. And she started in 1998. Cynthia has been instrumental in establishing the Kentucky Grape Industry Advisory Council and was his first chairman, first top member of that group. She's the Equus Run Vineyard located in the middle of the Kentucky Bluegrass region. Just a gorgeous area there, I have to say. It's just a lot of horse ranches around that area and just rolling green areas and all that. Just a beautiful, beautiful area around there. I keep hearing you make noise at me. I keep looking and there's no talking to me.
On Skype.
Yeah.
Chat.
I check on Skype and I'm not seeing anything there. I'm not seeing any notes, anything. Here, let me just put you a quick thing like that to see if you're coming through.
Yeah, I put a comment in there that the audio is breaking up a couple of times, pretty bad.
My end?
Yes, I'm listening on a cell phone right now, and I listen to the player, and I'm getting some audio issues on both of those.
Wow.
Yeah. Did you get the chat messages?
No, I haven't. I haven't seen any of that.
Okay. That's interesting. Let me check that again.
No, I haven't. Excuse us here. A little technical. Technical thing here.
If you can, let's real quick, because I can't. If you're not getting the chat, then I can't put the instructions in there. Try disconnecting from the call using Skype. Don't log out, but just disconnect. Hit your Skype end button,
call,
or whatever that red
end call. Yeah.
To hang up and then recall the show again. Oh. He's disconnected, so he can't hear me. Okay. Anyway, I don't know if you can hear me right now. There you are. Okay.
There I am. I just got back.
Wow, it's still going out. All right.
Yeah,
well,
my cute little British girl told me. She said that they're going to disconnect back into the live show. So there was no...
Okay.
No issues or anything with that.
Okay. Well, so far you're kind of in there, but it's a little scratchy, but... We will continue on it, so it's better than it was a few minutes ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we'll try that.
Wow, okay.
Okay, go ahead.
We hope that it doesn't break up too much, so if you're listening out there, then, you know, sorry about that little thing there, but we wanted to be sure you heard us. So,
yeah.
You know. Equestron, right. Let's talk a little bit about her wines, too, that she has. I mean, we... You know, it's always, if we're talking about a winery, we have to talk about their wines. She has some reds. Her red, she does a Cabernet Franc, a 2008 Cabernet Franc, used in European oak, a sort of a vanilla nose to it, and a light. I like a Cabernet Franc. In fact, I think when we visited the wineries, we may have bought a Cabernet Franc back when we were there a couple of years ago. She also has a Cabernet Sauvignon. This is a 2008 vintage, again aged in a mix of American and European oak barrels. Pinot Noir, her first vintage of Pinot Noir. She's a very young Pinot Noir, young vineyards, and she come out a 2009 vintage of a Pinot Noir. Not a long age. She's in a soft tannins, which I can understand. She used stainless steel with Hungarian oak chips. And then aged 2 years in old American oak barrels. So the oak chips are going to give it the initial oak, and then the oak barrels are going to milk it out a little bit more. She's rather proud of that. Again, I can read you all this about what she says about it. I'm not going to, but Pinot Noir. She also does a red Zinfandel, young American oak aged, black cherry nose flavors, which... Good Zinfandel should, so that's great. Excuse me. Chardonnay, as does everyone, makes a Chardonnay. Again, stainless steel on this. Very little oak. She did some oak 3 months, but basically she brought out the fruitiness of the Chardonnay. This oak is mellows it a little bit. So this is a Vidal Blanc, also vintage, a 2009 Vidal Blanc. The Vidal Blanc, she has it on her website here. It's always nice to share a little history of a grape with you. The parents are the Ugne Blanc, also known as the Torriano, which is a white Italian grape used in the county region a lot. And then the French-American hybrid Brion d'Or, also known as Cybele. The Vidal Blanc is a cross between those two. Vidal Blanc is a nice, it tends to be a little acidic. Vidal Blancs are like a Riesling, semi-sweet Riesling in the style. The acid gives you a little bit more of a Christmas Vidal Blancs tend to end up with a little bit shorter finish most of the time. Most Vidal Blancs I've ever had, they didn't, they weren't this long finish or long ending to the wine. It just seemed to be short. But I think that's because of the acid. They tend to be a little bit acidic. But she has a 2009 Vidal Blanc. Also, a Vignier, 2008, a floral, fruity Vignier, and a 2009 white Riesling. Not late harvest or anything, just a little bit of Riesling nose to it. And so it's she continued to ferment away the natural sugars, and so it left just a little bit of sweetness to it, not real heavy, not real strong sweetness. Does a couple of rosés, what she calls a horseman's red, and that's just a light fruity red rosé style wine. And she also does a Cabernet Sauvignon Blanc du Nord. She vintages this one in 2008. 1% residual sugar and rather low residual sugar for a rosé. But rosés are starting to become high-end now. It's something that's starting to happen more and more. You're starting to find rosés that are really expensive, aged and everything else. She's got a few specialty wines that she comes out with. A blush wine made with whites and a little bit of Merlot to give it. She calls it the Derby Bluegrass Blush. She also has the Derby Cabernet Sauvignon series, the Derby Chardonnay series, Derby Merlot Holiday Blush series. Specialty wines that she comes out because obviously the area that she's in. She also, Equus Run is also a big, I lost my thought, a big restaurant area there too. Was this the one with the big barn? I'm going to ask my engineer here. Equus Run with the creek? Okay, yeah, I thought so. They have a big barn. Actually, we went to Equus Run twice. We went one evening, and then we went to another winery, and the guy at the other winery says, oh, you need to go back to Equus Run. The winery is around back, back behind the hill. And we said, well, we went to the barn. And he said, no, the barn is the place where everybody, for weddings and stuff like that. He said, stop in there and take a look at that. So we did. Gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. It's a big old tobacco barn. But there's a creek that runs through it. You walk in the front door, the barn, the big barn door, you walk in the front door, and there's a little area there, maybe 20 by 20 square foot. And then there's a little bridge that you walk across to get over into the serving area. And they had it all set up for a wedding when we were there. And the little bridge goes over a creek that actually runs through the barn, right down to the edge of the barn and through the rocks and stuff. It's rather high elevation. Your first thought is flood, but the higher elevation, I don't think they're going to have too much flood. It might even be spring fed, too, as far as I know. But just a gorgeous place there, Equus Run. Just really a beautiful winery and a beautiful place there. Another place that we visited when we were out there, and I want to also talk about this one, was Lover's Leap. Lover's Leap Vineyard. Lover's Leap Vineyard is located in a overlooking the Kentucky River. It is a little bit of an elevation. We actually wound through back roads and through hills and stuff like that to get to it. When we finally found it, the beautiful little thing. The grapevines were on down the hillside in front of the building itself, a rather new building. The people in the winery were all well-educated. I mean, the people behind the counters really were quite educated, knew what they were talking about, had a passion for the wines themselves, and was very excited about wines and talking about them and all that. The The winery was first opened on 30 acres in Anderson County, which is, again, right around Lexington, that area there. And they, let's see, let me find this here. I'm navigating. I'm trying to find my notes and look at the websites and everything else and get myself confused. Lexington County, they are will open in 1994, and that's when the before the what they call the Federal Tobacco Settlement, and when the Federal Tobacco Settlement came in, everything started to expand. In the spring of 1994, the original owners Jerry and Ann Holder planted 5 acres and expanded from there. The winery was sold 3 years ago, I believe it was, just right after we were there. We were there in August, and I think that the following spring it was sold to another couple, Pam and Logan Leet, L-E-E-T, I believe it was pronounced Leet, or Let, probably Leet, who are continuing on the same style and same methods and everything as was used previously. One thing, though, the Leets have been trying different grapes, trying something new. One that they planted and that they're doing now is the Cynthiana or Norton. They have did their first 2009 first vintage of it, and they've won gold medals at the 2009 Kentucky State Fair, also the 2010 New York Finger Lakes competition. They won a gold medal also there. And when you start considering all the areas that do a Cynthiana or a Norton, that's really quite impressive. They also do a blueberry dessert wine. I remember that one. That one is delicious. I've had that one before. They have a 2007 Cab, a Merlot, one that they call Sloppy Seconds, which is three different varietals blended for what they call a second chance to impress people. It's a blend of Cabernet Franc, Merlot, and Schaumburschen. Just a light with a touch of sweetness. Amori, a Concord grape wine. Amori White, which is a blend of a French Colombard, Tremonette, Niagara, and Cayuga, which seems like a strange combo to me, but you know, I don't remember having that when I was there. The rosé is called Photo Finish. They have a 2008 Riesling, again, another Kentucky Fair Gold winner, and a Gewürztraminer was a winner of the South Concordance, 2009 South Concordance Gold winner, and a Vidal Blanc. They have continued the tradition of when it was started. They have continued to make some great wines coming out of there. Some of the comments that I've heard from people and stuff that have been there is really a the styles and stuff that when it was taken over by the Pam and Logan have really continued the legacy of Ann and Jerry Holder quite well. So that is Lover's Leap Winery, just a great location too. That's one thing I've always enjoyed about Lovers, you know, Lovers Leap. In fact, I've still got a couple of their wines I've got put away. Their Cabernet, I think I've still got a couple of those put away from when we were there, and I got those. Also, I'm going to talk. I said I was going to talk about Gene Ferris. Gene Ferris Winery is located. Again, around the Lexington area, not too far out of the Lexington area. It is a smaller winery started by a partnership of a couple of people. They're located, actually, their address is Lexington. I guess they're, you know, within the outskirts of Lexington. A great winery. When we pulled up to Gene Ferris Winery, we pulled into the driveway, and there were vineyards on both sides. It was rather large. Again, we were there in August, and so they hadn't quite harvested everything yet. So the vineyards were full of grapes and full of leaves and everything. We parked. The parking lot was absolutely packed. The cars everywhere. We found a spot, and we walked inside, and it was also packed inside. All the tables were full, and they have a patio out. When you walk in the front door, be out to the left, and the patio was full of people, and they were all sitting down for dinner. And we went up to the well, when we walked in, the girl greeted us, and she asked us if we were there for dinner, and we said no, we just wanted to taste some wines. So they said, well, go on up to the counter, and you know, you can taste. And we got up to the counter, and it was busy. I'll give them, you know, give them that. It was very busy, but it took a while for the young man to come over and finally wait on us. We told him we wanted to taste just a couple of wines. He gave us a glass and asked what we'd like to try. Started out with a white, and then after, you know, an unusually long period of time, he brought the he came back and we asked if we can try a red or two, and so he poured us that. It was very nice wines. The wines, without a doubt, were really quite impressive. But they also were, in my opinion, they were quite expensive. I mean, great food wines. I have to really point out great food wines. They were, and their food there is phenomenal. They have a bistro that is just absolutely, you know, I mean, some premium. Food and I got all my engineer talking to me about something. Okay, she wasn't talking to me. They have a rosé, a dry red wine, Chardonnay, again, everyone mentioned Chardonnay, one that they call a Tempest, which is a blend of Tempranillo, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Cabernet Franc. They have Pinot Noir, Merlot, Riesling, a slightly sweet Riesling, and Muscat, which is much sweeter, a sweet blush in red, Syrah, Cabernet Sauvignon, Malbec, Petit Syrah. A lot of different grapes they grow there. A lot of, and not a lot of grapes of any one type, but a lot of different grapes. Very small vineyard, very small area, but a very, you know, quite diversified as far as the area goes. They the dinner menu. Just to give you an idea, and if I talk about this vineyard, Jean Ferris Vineyard, I have to talk about their food, because while we were sitting there, we went crazy because it looks so delicious and smells so good. The entrees, they have sea scallops, halibut, chicken, lamb, chestnut, ravioli, filet mignon. They have for appetizers, they have pimento cheese and crab fondue, escargot, smoked salmon. It's just phenomenal. It's really just a great menu and a great place. We sat there for about, 15, 20 minutes, tasted some wines. We had been traveling. We were in shorts and jeans and stuff, and most people were, you know, business casual that were all eating there and all that, and so we excused ourselves and left, but an impressive place, as is most of the places in Kentucky. We went to one that we sat down and tasted some wines. The winemaker had a chance to talk with me for a while, and we talked about the Kentucky wine business, how it's exploding. It's just a phenomenal leaps and bounds exploding in Kentucky because the people of Kentucky support it so well. The people of Kentucky really do stand behind what they're doing in that. And because of that, the wineries are just doing phenomenally well. Every winery, almost without exception, has a restaurant. And again, one we were in, a little tasting area, which was about 50 by 30, and we looked at each other, and there was 3 or 4 tables there, and we thought, wow, this has to be the smallest restaurant we were ever in. But then we looked through the big double doors that were on the side of the room, and it led into like a 80 table restaurant area. We asked, and they said, oh, we fill it up all the time, weekends, evenings, and stuff. We were there on the early afternoon. And it's just, this is the way it is throughout Kentucky. It's just that the people supported. The wines are very diversified. You can find, I didn't get into all the different wines and all the different wineries. Talon is another one that was great. We visited Talon, which is located in Shelbyville, Kentucky, again, around that same area. That's where we did most of it. If you were to go to wineries in Kentucky, all you would have to do is basically go into Frankfort or Louisville, either one of those, and you would get the majority of the wineries. There are a few wineries down in the lower western part of the state in that area, but most of them are just south of Cincinnati in the upper end of Kentucky. Most of them are in the Cincinnati area, and then down south into the area of Louisville or Frankfort. I'm impressed with the Kentucky wines. I'm impressed with the way they do the wines. I'm impressed with how the state has helped them expand and explode. Again, a lot of the stuff that I've read and looked at was talking about 20, 15, 20 wines or wineries throughout the state. And I've seen others that are listed as many as 35 or so. And I think that's because of what the state of Kentucky has done and how well they stand behind it. So, Kentucky, I'm sorry that we didn't get a call back with Run, but if you get an opportunity, look up Kentucky, go out there, taste some of their wines. It's well worth the trip, I really believe. And just to see the area and just to see the horse area and the wineries themselves. It's fascinating. Really, it's fascinating.
Yeah. I don't know if you can hear me there. The audio cleared up for a little bit, and then it went south again for a while. So I'm not sure if maybe that might have deterred somebody, but I was listening on the cell phone, and then I hooked up the player online, and it was just going, I don't know, it's just something strange about it. I'll ask you a few things off air and see if we can debug this for the next show. But this doesn't happen every week. I haven't heard this in ages. So
no, we haven't had this problem in a long time. Yeah,
long time. Yeah,
we probably get a lot of listeners.
Yes, we have been getting quite a few. That's for sure. And we have five guests in the chat room. So thank you for joining us on the chat room. We always love to see everybody out there. If you're just there to watch the chat room, because I'll update and tell you what Ron's talking about as he's talking, and kind of mention a few topics there. But we'd like to have your feedback in that as well. If you'd like to type something, you're more than welcome to do that. And you can also contact Florida State's Winery, Ron's domain there at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. You can call them direct, Florida State's Winery, at 813-996-2113. 813-996-2113. Or email clerk at floon.com, C-O-R-P at F-L-E-W-N.com. And I'm looking at the timer. I don't think I can hear the countdown. But anyway,
60 seconds.
Florida State's. Oh, good. That's a timer. Okay. Visit Florida State's Winery on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Floridaestateswines.com. Visit them there. And let them know you listen to the show. And we have about 39 seconds left to go. And I just want to thank everybody for listening. Next week, we will be covering the next.
Louisiana.
Okay. So I better write that down. So we will talk to everybody then. We have just a few seconds left. Thank you all, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Ron. Another informative broadcast. I'm just wondering if what it's going to sound like in the archives if it's garbled there. But we do apologize, and we'll make up for it, and we'll be back next week. Next Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern time right here on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you, and good
night. Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
See if it's on. Is it on?
I
on live now.
In show now. Yeah, we're done.
Okay.
All the air.
Are you listening to the show? Is there a speaker on or something that you're listening back to it or something? Or no?
No, just everything is the same way it's been. I have a speaker sitting here in the front of me, which used to be up here on the shelf, but
it's almost like there's an echo coming back. It's like I can hear you talk, but then there's like a real quick echo, and one of the other is trying to it cuts the audio out, and I don't know why.
Let me put
a bad Skype connection. I don't know.
How's that? Is that any better?
No, I still hear an echo.
Yeah. See that? I just moved the speaker back up to where it was, and it's still doing the same thing. That's the only difference. Everything else is the same.
And yeah, every once in a while, you're in there, you know, it comes in clear for a little bit, and then all of a sudden, it's almost like you're underwater or something.
Yeah, and I'm getting the same from you, so I'm almost thinking it might be our connection through Blog Talk Radio or through Skype.
Yeah, that could be it.
I mean, if we're both getting it from both ends here and it's cutting out, I think it's more of a connection.
Yeah, it could be maybe Skype, the network Skype is having a problem, because I think when I talked to you last time, I was on my cell phone, and you said you could hear me okay on that one?
Yeah, I heard you great on that.
Okay. So I'm wondering if Skype is having network issues or something. But I don't know. And then I load the player up, and I'm like listening to it, and I go, ooh, it's still cutting out. So it's not it wasn't my Skype connection. It wasn't, I don't know, it had to have been Skype. I mean,
yeah,
because it was affecting my audio when I was on Skype also.
I think it must be Skype because, you know, with both of us doing the same thing and both of us cracking and breaking up on it, it sounds like it's...
Yeah, it has to be something there.
Yeah.
I went in the other room and told, you know, make sure that the kids weren't watching videos online or something, because that'll take a lot of bandwidth. Because I had that happen last year. They were playing these games or something, and if it uses a lot of networking, then that can cause that issue also. Because it'll use up. You know, we have Roadrunner through here, the broadband, but if they're doing multimedia stuff over the internet, it's going to take away from the voice. You know, we're going to be competing for bandwidth on the internet. So I made sure tonight that they were not doing anything, and neither one of them were on the laptop. So I don't know what's going on, but it must be a Skype network issue or something.
I tend to think if it's bothering us both and you're hearing me break up and crack up, that's what I'm hearing from you.
Yeah.
So
it has to be a network thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I still took some notes, so that was pretty cool. I just, you know, something else I noticed, I went to their event page on Equus Run.
Yeah.
And last week I remembered I was doing some kind of, or a week before, where I was doing a thing on events. They all seem to have like these murder mystery dinner things.
I noticed that. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
I was looking at Equus, and I go, oh my gosh, they have Murder on the Rocks 1 month. They have, you know, some other murder thing. I was like, what is it with the wineries that have these murder things?
I know, but it just, you know, a lot of them have that, and I noticed that too. And you know, and these are the ones that you're seeing. I'm looking at a lot of others, and I'm seeing it pop up a lot of times there.
Wow. I don't know how there must be some kind of connection. Is there a connection between wine and blood?
Maybe.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know.
The
last one we did last week or week before last, they had a whole year's worth of, you know, murder something going on. I was like, oh, my gosh. I thought maybe, okay, it's isolated. Then this week I'm looking at Kentucky saying the same thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
maybe we get one of them on the air that has that and go, okay, what's the deal with all these mystery things going on here?
Yeah, I'll see if I can't find one and ask them what it's all about then.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. So next week I'll advertise for Louisiana.
Louisiana.
It's not Louisiana. Okay.
No, Louisiana.
I'll practice on that for the week. Make sure I get that. Make sure I get that down. So we'll talk to you next Thursday then.
Talk to you next
Thursday.
We'll have the audio issues.
Okay. All right. You have a good one, and thanks a lot and everything, and we'll talk to you next time.
Okay, you too. Thank you.
All right. Take it easy. Thank you.
Yeah. Bye now.